Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. I'm Phil Masella, Marketing Manager for Platinum Accounts at RWS. And today we're talking about localization testing and why it's become such an important part of delivering successful global products and user experiences. Joining me today are two experts from our functional testing team, Anne and Francesca, both senior managers in testing with extensive experience supporting global testing and localization initiatives. And Francesca, thank you for being here today. Would you mind briefly introducing yourselves to the audience?
So yes, my name is Anne. So I am a senior testing in senior manager in testing. I've been with the company for almost 10 years now, and I work with a giant. I work for a giant tech client in localization. And as you can hear, originally I'm not from the US, I'm from France. So that makes me speak two, even three languages, French, English, and German.
And hi, I'm Francesca. I am also a senior manager in testing. And like Anne, I started working for a major tech client about 9 years ago now. Yeah, and well, as you can probably hear as well, I'm Italian, so I speak Italian, English, ancient Greek and Latin, but I don't think those count.
Great. So for listeners who are not aware, what is localization testing and why has it become so important in today's global market?
So to really understand what localization is, you have to think of how software is created first, because most apps or websites are built in English. You have UX designers and they create the interface design. You have developers who write the code, but they all do that in English. But once that is done, the company might want to launch in 40 or 50 countries, and all those English strings are sent out to be translated. And this, here comes the first big issue. The translator, they often get these strings in a massive spreadsheet without even seeing the product. So they completely lack context. And they might see, for example, the word book, and they don't know if it's a book you read or if it's about booking a flight. Sometimes it's even machine translated and it's not reviewed after. So that's where our teams comes in as the final reviewer for both functionality and linguistics. So we test the app or the hardware on real devices, just like real users in their own countries. But we do have that professional linguistic and engineering eye. And in one single pass, we make sure that the functionality works perfectly, exactly like the English version does. And we also make sure that the software speaks the language of the people using it.
Excellent. Okay, many people think localization is just translation, but it's much more than that. What does a successful localization testing workflow look like?
Yes, it's a very common misconception that we are glorified translators, but what we do is not translation. We combine software engineering and linguistic, and we work in a very niche field where language meets technology. So we bridge the gap between engineering and linguistics, and the people in our team have a very specific skill set. We are extremely good with both technology and languages. So when a company wants to launch a product globally, they hand over to us raw, very technical documentation that is usually designed for functional engineers to explain what they are launching. These kind of testing instructions, test notes can be very often just a list of vague test cases and use cases. For example, they might tell us user is notified when a special order arrives, but they don't tell us how the user is going to be notified, where they're going to be notified, how to trigger the notification, and so on. So there is a lot of research, troubleshooting, attention to detail, critical thinking that happens on our side. And our localization process requires going over those technical notes and turning them into very digestible step-by-step instructions for our language testers, who may not be too familiar with technology. Thanks to our detailed test plans, testers know exactly how to set up devices, navigate them, get to specific screens, as well as what the screens should look like before they evaluate them in their language. And this allows them to evaluate each element in the UI in context.
Yeah, and also, so there is something, another thing people don't realize is the technical setup is that is involved. Usually I'm asked, so are you a translator or are you in translation? Yes, but actually we are in that, we are very a very technical team. A lot of what we do requires setting up environments that an average user or the average linguist cannot access because it involves enabling debug flags using ADB commands or configuring emulators. So we do have test leads, and our test leads, they basically a mix of an engineer and a linguist all in one. And they take care of that technical heavy lifting so that our testers can focus on the cultural and functional experience of the app. And also we, you know, we as LPT, so localized product testing, we also have to look at the app's interface in a totally different way than the QA engineers to figure out the true scope of a project. This is what Francesca is saying, that a QA engineer might see one technical step in a feature, where localized product testing sees four different steps to see every hidden piece in the process of the feature. So we ensure that nothing gets ignored just because it's buried deep into the app. Also, when we submit an issue to the client, every time we submit an issue to the client, it goes through a thorough internal check. Our test leads don't speak the specific target language every time. Even if our test leads, they do speak quite a few languages. Everyone speaks quite a few languages, but they are trained to ensure the validity of each bug. And because of this added quality layer, we are proud to maintain a 98% bug acceptance rate. So that means that nearly every single issue we hand over is accepted by the client as valid and worth fixing. So that saves the client a massive amount of time and money.
Right. That's very interesting. That's great. So it's much more than just translation. So it's obvious there. Yeah.
Yes, it's not translation.
Yeah. So why is it important to test both the linguistic experience and the functional experience together rather than separately?
It is vital, actually, to test linguistic and functional together, because you cannot truly evaluate if the words are correct without seeing the full picture, without seeing the entire living application. If you have a spreadsheet or even a static screenshots, that's not enough. You need a global view of the product in motion to understand the full picture. Because without that, a single translation choice might not just sound off or sometimes even confuse the user. It could totally break the app's functionality. And honestly, as I was saying, doing it this way is also better for the client's budget, because we look at the functionality and the language all in one single pass, then we catch everything at the same time. And it saved them from having to pay for two different rounds of testing.
Right.
Yeah, our team looks for things like in context translation. For example, like we've seen a watch button referring to a wearable device, like a smartwatch, being translated as the verb to watch, like to watch something, which mm-hmm. was very confusing in the UI. So as Anne mentioned, often translators or even machine translation or AI, they do not have enough context to translate some of the terminology accurately, and the meaning gets often lost in translation. Something else we check is UI integrity. So English is actually a very short language. Many other languages like German, Dutch, Malayalam can be 30% longer. So we check the UI to make sure that the longer text isn't being cut off or overlapping with icons or creating weird line breaks and make the design look broken. We also check the internationalization part, which is things like time formats, local calendars, currency symbols. So if, for example, a user in Europe sees a US date format or has a calendar that starts with Sunday, Europe uses Monday as a first day of the week, the app feels foreign and not user-friendly. And again, as Anne mentioned, it's not just limited to linguistics, but also functional soundness. we ensure that the app actually works in each language. We make sure that, for example, unique characters of a language don't cause freezes or crashes. For example, languages like Arabic, Urdu, or Farsi, they are RTL languages, so their sentences display from right to left instead of left to right, like English. So icons, buttons, etc., everything is all mirrored, flipped in the UI, and we have to make sure that these are handled correctly, or the whole interface will not feel intuitive to users.
Wow, that's really interesting. It sounds almost impossible to do it separately when you mention it like that, when you say that.
Totally, totally. Yeah, we don't understand that some companies do it differently, actually.
Yeah, I could see a lot of errors taking place and a lot of things being missed. Yeah, really, really good. Yeah, okay. As companies expand globally, what are the biggest challenges they face when launching products across multiple languages and regions?
I would say definitely speed versus quality. So companies want to push code every day. They are constantly competing to be the most used, the most popular. So there might not be time for them to test a new feature fully because they want to push it out right away. And they might miss something, or they might want to cut some steps like localization testing. And this is very risky because when you are launching in 50 regions, moving fast means potentially breaking things in languages that engineers don't understand and causing issues that they might not notice right away, but that they might impact users significantly. Another issue is maintaining consistency. So as companies scale and add more features or update existing features, they end up with thousands of strings of text across mobile and web UIs. So maintaining consistency becomes really difficult. If you have a screen where your brand voice is playful or friendly, but then on the next screen, it sounds academic or too formal, it's not good. Users are not going to like that. The same things applies to translations and terminology in general. Maybe translations were handled by different vendors, and so part of the apps that are supposed to go together and be in the same workflow might feel disconnected.
Right. Yeah, it seems like a big ask, right? Especially if they want to launch it all at the same time. Mm-hmm. It seems like a big, big step for them. Wow. And how do tight release timelines impact testing strategies for global product launches?
So the timelines in this industry are objectively intense. So it's really not uncommon for us to receive a project for 60 languages with a 5-day turnaround. So it sounds completely impossible sometimes, but honestly, to us, it's just a regular Tuesday. Okay, we're used to this rhythm, or we have a core team, and that core team is really trained to always be ready to jump on whichever urgent task is more urgent than the previous one that was already very urgent. And so yeah, that's how we work every day. So
smaller test cases are easier to digest. Often lately, instead of getting entire apps to test, which could be 500 test cases and 25 hours of testing per language, we are asked to test small new features. In some cases, even on just a new setting screen, that could be 10 test cases, 30 minutes of testing per language. But the volume of these requests is much higher. So our strategy relies on our test leads who transform so many requests into super streamlined and execution ready test plans. And they make sure that our native testers can start immediately without sacrificing precision or missing deadlines. We have the hardware, we have the people, and we have the internal QA layers that are already in sync. So we have the infrastructure to make it happen without sacrificing quality.
So what does it take to scale localization testing across dozens of languages, markets, and device types? And what are some of the operational challenges involved?
To give you an idea of the scale, we manage a pool of approximately 300 native testers globally, and we have almost 4,000 devices at the office. And many of these devices are unreleased prototypes, which means they never leave the building and they are under strong supervision. Then we do have a person who orchestrates the resources and creates a schedule for in-house test specialists and contractors coming to the office to test all projects depending on their urgency. And so for one client, the client we most work on, we talk about 70 to 80 projects per month. So it's huge.
Yeah, and our leadership team, ourselves included, started as freelance linguistic testers. So we were the ones testing and finding bugs 8 to 10 years ago. This means that we have really a deep respect for the talent in our team, from the freelance testers to test leads and specialists. We are also really, really obsessed with efficiency and being the best in the industry. So we are a bit intense, or so we've been told. But we balance that intensity with a strong sense of humor and team spirit. It's what keeps the team intact when we're working 14-hour days to hit a global deadline. I think overall we're people who are very like deeply personally invested in what we do.
Yeah, I guess there's no choice, right?
Well, there is a choice because we choose to stay, and our team, everyone in the team chooses to stay, and we have people, we pretend people in this team. So it's I think the sense of humor is something really that we really have in common, and that makes us work better. Actually, that feeling of being together.
Yeah, just overall, I think a sense of belonging in the team. Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay. So how important is it for testers to have both technical expertise and linguistic or cultural understanding?
In a perfect world, every tester would be a software engineer who is also a linguist. But the reality is that this is a very, very niche field. So it is rare to find someone who has both deep technical expertise and native level cultural understanding. So our entire process is designed to bridge gaps. We've accepted that often we find people who don't have a background in computer science, but are extremely detail oriented and proficient in their language. So we design all of our training, testing materials and instructions for someone who is not particularly tech savvy. Native level language proficiency cannot be taught, but how to use an app or devices or a device in most cases can be. So we try to take the burden of technical complexity off of the testers. We provide simplified step-by-step instructions, logical flows, clear English reference screenshots, so that we can empower a non-tech savvy person to do things like running ADB commands, using dev options, navigating complex device setups. We give them all of the tools that they need to be technically successful so that they can focus 100% of their brain power on the linguistic and cultural nuances.
How do testing teams stay flexible when projects evolve quickly or when new technologies are introduced?
So we are linguists. As Francesca said, we cannot teach the native language and we cannot teach linguistic, but for the technology we can. And actually we're a team of total techies. For us, new technology isn't something to be afraid of. It's fun. It's a fun tool to make our life easier, to make our work more efficient. And honestly, we get like kids in a candy store when we receive pre-release devices. It's always like,
we've been in the room for the birth of major technology. I remember years ago we started testing for a major AI project, and at that point we had no idea what AI was and what it could do. But instead of being overwhelmed by the lack of a traditional map, our team found it interesting and fun. So that mindset, treating everything as a puzzle to solve, is how we stay flexible. And since new technology, like we test new technologies all the time, we're used to things being broken or breaking things sometimes. We are comfortable with ambiguity and we always expect the unexpected. We're always looking for new ways to use new tech to improve our internal processes. And if any new tools come out that can help us automate steps or, you know, anything to make our life easier, we're the first ones to adopt it.
In your experience, what separates a high-performing localization testing team from just an average one?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a bit of organized insanity. So a high-performing team, it's not just a group of people with the right skills. It's really a group of people who are obsessed with the challenge. We are excited by impossible projects, the tight deadlines. And actually, we're very proud to know that our work makes the client happy and also impacts people globally.
Yeah, many, many of us who are now part of the core leadership started as testers together. We've grown up in the industry side by side, and we are all very much in sync, maybe too much sometimes. We handle issues in the same way because we build the standards and the processes together.
Yeah, and as I said earlier, so you often hear that calling a team a family is kind of a cliche, but actually for us, it's really the only word that fits. No one feels like they are pulling more weight than anyone else, and there is no, oh, that's not my job. Mm-hmm. It's all about jumping in, helping each other toward one goal.
Yeah, we also have a very specific, weird sense of humor, which is kind of our survival mechanism. We send the same memes at the same time because we all operate in the same way. Even when working under pressure, which is most of the time, we still joke around, or we make each other laugh. And that shared humor is what keeps the team intact, even when, you know, things are hard and we're feeling under pressure. What also separates us, I think, from an average team is that the leadership doesn't have to push the team. The drive is internal. Everyone in the team is very much personally invested in the quality of what we do. So when we have team members who respect each other deeply, you don't just get an average output.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So it looks like teamwork is what you need here.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. What metrics do you look at to measure the success of a localization testing program?
In my opinion, the most dangerous metric is actually the bug volume. A standard team can report 500 bugs, but if 300 of these bugs get rejected by the client because they are working as intended or too minor to fix or preferential, that team has actually wasted the client's time and money. So bug volume is not a good metric to measure the success of a localization testing program, I think.
Yeah, one of our most important KPIs is bug acceptance rate. As Anne mentioned earlier, we have a 98% bug acceptance rate. This means that for every 100 issues that we submit, 98 are accepted by the client as valid and fixable issues, which tells us two things. The first is that our testers are good, and second, that our careful QA process is working.
And, you know, at the end of the day, the ultimate proof that we're doing this right is when the client trusts us enough to leave our competitors and move their projects to us. When we work for a major tech giant and they decide to hand us over their global testing, that's the ultimate win for us. It proves that our value isn't just a pitch on the slide deck. It's a real proven competitive advantage we have.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. And how important is collaboration between QA, localization, development, and product teams in delivering a great user experience?
It is fundamental to maintain efficiency. When we work with a product team and an engineering team who provide clear instructions and are quick to respond when we need to clarify a technical setup, it's easier for us to do our job at the highest level. And it allows us to move fast and not lose precision. By now, we've pretty much mastered the art of talking to stakeholders from all kinds of backgrounds. We're quick to assess someone's area of expertise and adjust how we explain things. Just kind of like how we translate technical engineering notes into a format that's easy for non-tech people to understand, we adapt our information based on who we're talking to. And I think this is really appreciated because it keeps us efficient, to the point, and easy to work with.
Great. What role does real-world testing play in ensuring products perform well for global users?
So real-world testing is about testing for the unexpected, and we are very creative with that. We have literally put devices in freezers, in ovens, in buckets of water to simulate freezing, heat, drowning. We have set up fully functioning smart homes to test how a phone or user interacts with smart vacuums, garage doors, lighting systems, cameras. So in the real world, localization means making sure the command to turn on the lights, to play the music works instantly and accurately, no matter what the language is.
We've even tested smart clothing. And when you're testing a piece of clothing that has integrated tech, you need a real person inside it.
Yeah, and I don't think you want to put that in a dryer either, do you?
That's a fun one. Okay. It works. You can trigger all overheating messages when it's in the oven.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. What trends are you currently seeing in localization and testing that organizations should be paying attention to?
Lately, we are seeing a massive push for hyper-local language. UI cannot just be in Spanish anymore. It needs to be tailored for Spain, Mexico, Colombia. For example, the French spoken in Montreal is different than the one spoken in Paris. We even see this for English. We test 7 variants of English.
We've also seen a massive shift in gender inclusivity. So we're testing UI that adapts the entire linguistic structure based on a user gender identity. And this in gendered languages like Spanish or French, it can be quite complex technically and linguistically to implement, but it's becoming the standard.
Yeah, I think that's a step in the right direction. Yeah, to have like super nuanced content out there. I think that's beneficial. Yeah.
And this is exactly where, you know, the use of native testers, it's very important. As an example, I told you I'm from France, so I can tell if something sounds unnatural in French from France, but if it's French from Canada, I am unable to do that. It's impossible for me because I don't know what is natural in Montreal, but it's still French.
Yeah, exactly. Great. As we all know, AI is transforming many parts of the industry. How is it impacting localization and testing workflows today? And do you think automation will ever fully replace human localization testing, or will human expertise always be essential?
That is the question of the year. In 2026, AI is everywhere, but in our world, it has not been a replacement. AI is a tool that we use for added efficiency. The products that we are testing should at the end be used by a human. So a human perspective when testing is always needed. In recent months, AI has been a huge help for us, especially to help testers articulate complex linguistic nuances. If a Burmese tester is struggling to explain a rare grammatical rule that applies to their language, AI helps them draft a clear professional explanation in English so that our test leads can understand the bug and are able to validate it and decide, you know, that this bug is ultimately valid and should be submitted to the client. We also use AI to summarize meeting notes, polish project instructions. We ensure that our internal documentation is bulletproof. I mean, until recently, I remember how much of a pain it was to keep meeting minutes and like just having to keep notes every meeting and then send them out at the end. And that's just not a thing anymore. Just AI does that and they're pretty accurate. But AI is not the one finding the issues. It doesn't have the human eye for UI localization testing. So our users are human and our final gatekeepers must be human too.
Great, that makes sense. Looking ahead, how do you see localization testing evolve over the next few years?
The localization industry moves fast. And so what we're doing now is really different than what we did just 2 years ago. And to continue with AI actually brings us more work because we test AI-generated content in apps and websites. So we have a brand new type of testing that blends localization and AI evaluation together. Also, we test accessibility now. You know, with all new European regulations, it's important for a company to have products that are compliant with the law in terms of accessibility. So I think that down the road, AI will help us with some internationalization testing, like checking for character truncation, basic grammar, and code stability. But in the meantime, it brings us work.
Great. What advice would you give an organization that wants to improve the global user experience of their products?
My biggest piece of advice to any product team is don't treat localization as a final coat of paint. If you wait until the end to think about your global users, you'll build a product that that is incompatible with half of the world, even if it's an amazing product. It can only be a product's true value is only unlocked when it's inclusive. Otherwise, you risk launching an amazing piece of technology, but that completely flops globally just because the people using it don't feel like it was made for them.
Yeah, localization is an underestimated field for sure. Our goal is to reach a point where a user in Tokyo and a user in Paris have experiences so seamless and so native that they forget that the app was ever built anywhere else. So we're making sure that everyone, regardless of where they live or how they identify, feels seen.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's great. And finally, what excites you the most about the future of localization and global testing?
What excites me the most is that innovation has no ceiling. Every time a major app or device goes through a full UI revamp, I think that's it. It cannot possibly get better than this. And then a year later, the developers prove me wrong. They find a way to make products faster, more intuitive, more user-friendly, even just more aesthetically pleasing, and they add amazing features. So it is incredibly humbling, I think, and exciting to be part of an industry that is constantly expanding. And of course, as long as there are UI revamps and new ways for humans to interact with technology, there will be a need for what we do. So I am genuinely in awe of where we're going, whether it's the next generation of wearables, even smarter homes, or tech that doesn't exist yet. I can't wait to get it into our test labs.
Yeah, same for me. I love being surprised by technology and being in a position where we get to help build the future and ensure that technology dynamically speaks everyone's language, just like humans do. This is what makes this industry so incredibly exciting.
Great, great. Okay, we're at time. And Francesca, thank you both for joining me today and for sharing your expertise and insights on localization testing and global quality.
Thank you so much for having us. Yes.
And thank you everyone for attending today. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If you want to learn more about how RWS combined functional and linguistic testing for a global tech company, I provided the case study link below. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.